You're listening to DraftKings Network.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stopped, opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.
This is the Dan Levitar Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I wanted to get into something that happened this weekend with Dana White and Ariel Helwani. What are you celebrating back there?
I was just going to tell you, we got to get to this UFC scandal. And there's the Ariel thing. And also, Usman out of nowhere became an interesting person and fighter all in one card.
I remember watching him last time, though. It was so boring.
It was super boring. Yes. The Masvidal fight was very boring, and that was the book on Usman, that he was just boring. Like, how this guy is so great, but who's going to pay to watch these fights anymore? And he became an electric fighter over the weekend. Burns was throwing heavy, heavy shots. Almost got him in the first round, and Usman, they were throwing haymakers in that fight. It was a great UFC fight over the weekend.
I bet you Masvidal would have loved to fight him that way.
Well, Usman called out Masvidal at the end. Now, they've already fought. However, the built-in excuse, 6 days notice. Masvidal took that fight. It was a nice payday. Didn't have his trainer, Mike Brown, with him at Fight Island. So you can make a very merit-based argument that if Masvidal had an entire training camp, that maybe that fight goes different.
It was a money grab. It was a quick pandemic money grab.
But why are you saying that? Because he would have preferred to fight a guy who was coming at him? Actually, because he was playing defense against Masvidal.
No, because Masvidal would have loved a fight that would have been in the center of the octagon. Right. And this is, Burns does this. He's somebody who starts fast, and it was surprising to see Usman go ahead and decide that that's what he was going to do against him, because he has been a defensive fighter. But for however interesting you find the mechanics of what's going on in the sport, and it is a sport that requires, you've heard me say this for a long time, I think it's the centerpiece of why it is that Dana White and I went from having a decent on-air relationship to it no longer being that, because he doesn't like tough questions, man. He doesn't like anything that resembles journalism. He's got no use whatsoever. He's a carnival barker, and he thinks we all exist in the circus in order to just entertain and, you know, genuflect and just promote his sport. Because what does he care about journalism? He's not even a commissioner, Stugatz. He's just the head and face of a sport where he comes from boxing, carnival barking. It's okay to be yourself and be 100% authentic, even if that authentic is crass and speaks during the Republican National Convention. But this is a guy who has dragged this sport into the mainstream with his substantive will and carnival barking, and he has done it from the gutter. This was John McCain fighting this sport and making it cockfighting. This was not endorsed by the mainstream. Never mind ESPN and Disney. This was a sport that was negotiated in an alley, an extension with Fox, and it represented the height of the mainstream. And Dana White has always wanted to get into bed with ESPN. And ESPN seems less interested in journalism than ESPN has been. ESPN seems to be making a sports rights move to become a sports rights company. And at the center of that is that one guy speaking at the Republican National Convention at the center of everything who doesn't like tough questions and likes the dictator bully role, endorses it, speaks on its behalf, doesn't have any use for journalism in bed with a corporate partner that is giving him a lot of money and that he is making a lot of money for in a pandemic that has cared about journalism, used to care about journalism, may still care about journalism, but has to navigate all of these business interests because now you're in bed with a guy who is used to getting his every way and he's making you money during a pandemic. And he braved going in there not caring about the fake news media, making videos where he's heroically going around as a leader, belittling that media community, which he doesn't have any use for. And now he's gone at calling a douche the only credible journalistic thing that's ever existed in his sport. Ariel Helwani, who's actually trying to do journalism. So, of course, he's going to land on the wrong side of Dana White. What does Dana White, dictator, bully, have any use for someone trying to do journalism in his world? But now he's not trying to just bully Ariel Helwani. Now he's trying to bully the journalism of ESPN. And what you saw happen publicly is a whole bunch of journalists saying, hey, this ain't right that this guy who's making our company money here that is allowed some rules that the rest of us aren't. None of us can call each other ESPN on ESPN crime a douche. None of us can say that about someone as uniquely professional as Ariel Helwani bringing journalism to that sport, Stugatz, and bringing journalism to that guy who has tried to eradicate him at every turn with a series of moves. ESPN had to come out and make a statement on behalf of Ariel Helwani because of the journalists and peers who weren't okay with that guy putting his voice on douche on Ariel Helwani, who represents all of the best things that ESPN used to represent. But now it's Dana White that represents you in public. That's the choice that was made
well,
to get
Dana
in.
Well, Dana White that makes you money. The choice
was made to get into bed with that guy after a lot of resistance, after John McCain's resistance and a lot of resistance. That was not a mainstream sport. We love that sport. I love that sport. I had Dana White on the air here across a decade. What he just does, what he just did, and what he consistently does to Ariel Helwani is all manner of wrong. And as a company, ESPN needs to publicly stand behind that, not just because it's been pressured by Jeff Passan and put out some statement that's a little stronger than, you know, his work speaks for itself. You can ask some questions of the guy at the top of your pay structure who's calling people douche who work for you, and you can feel free to support your employees in a way that's meaningful against a business partner, because you did when I asked Manfred journalistic questions on the air with ESPN, and Manfred was the commissioner of that sport, and Manfred did not like that I was asking those questions. You got a guy who's representing Disney now, who's putting his face and his name on Ariel Helwani as a douche for giving you his thoughts on anti-Semitism after Gina Carano had done a bunch of questionable things on social media. And Gina Carano, obviously one of the most famous female fighters in the history of mixed martial arts, she said some things that felt anti-Semitic. Ariel Helwani questioned those things. And then Dana White says that Ariel Helwani is the douche for making that story about himself. I do wonder, Mike, what do you do if you're ESPN in that spot? Because they got forced into making a statement, and the statement was pretty tepid. It's not telling Dana White publicly anything that makes Dana White look bad.
I don't think ESPN doesn't care about journalism. I think you can make that argument and it probably goes overboard. I don't think they care about journalism as much as they care about sports rights, and sometimes the two intersect. Quite often they do, actually, and it puts ESPN in a very difficult spot. I think if you're worried about a business, you back up your partner, your media partner. But you do need to back up some of the people because people take those messages. You're sending a very clear message if you don't come out in full support of Ariel Helwani. And that needs to be explained to Dana White. Look, ESPN, it was plenty of people wrote about it. Keep politics out of sports. And ESPN actually saw ratings benefits for some of that. Their moves worked, man. They changed the six, and it worked. It got SportsCenter better numbers and putting the emphasis on sports. It is a solid business decision, but there comes times, like we saw over the last 4 years, where you need to disregard that at your own detriment to your business model and everything. Certain things need to be backed up and supported. And speaking out against anti-Semitism is one of those layups. Dana White hasn't been one of those people that has kept politics out of sports. He champions the fighters that actually wear red hats in the ring and make gimmicks out of making politics a sports issue and vice versa. So I think ESPN should take this opportunity because they're usually a little bit more muddied when it comes to Dana White and the awkward positions that he puts them in. This one is very understandable. There is one side to this one. It's not Dana White's side. And ESPN needs to come out in full support of Ariel Helwani. I think it's really easy. Now, you are getting criticized some for your vocal support in that easy for you to say when you're outside of the corporate machine. But take my word for it, I was on plenty of uncomfortable phone calls about the spots that Dan would put this show and ESPN in over his criticisms of the UFC, criticisms that he brought directly to Dana White. So if you're levying that accusation, it's one that comes without any sort of historical knowledge of what this show has always discussed directly with the president.
Well, let's go back a ways, because I have been sort of marveling at what our relationship and the specifics of my relationship with Dana White have been. I went to a fight one time because Dana White was willing to get me tickets. I got Dana White a thank you gift from the Miami Heat that was for his kids. So I was grateful for him giving me a certain access to his sport, a sport that for a long time I have championed on the air here long before we joined ESPN. And I've always liked his carnival barking ways as sort of a different kind of way to lead in that sport. And just because his politics run counter to mine is not why it is that I object now to Dana White. Dana White, I have tried to call him over the years. I've left messages on his machine. Hey, are we good? Is there a problem here? I'm assuming, given that I've never heard back from him, that his problem is that when he comes on with me and with us, I sometimes ask him questions that don't feel propaganda-ish enough, that I'm not afraid to sort of ask him about paying his fighters poorly, that I'm not afraid of some of the blowback that I got whenever he would complain about something it is that I was doing, because we have a corporate partner at ESPN and there are things that need to be navigated with a corporate partner. But I don't know. He's never told me where our relationship went sideways. And when he came to ESPN, he did highly questionable with my father. He didn't tell me he had any issue with me. I've never seen Dana White have any kind of issue with me, but I know he objects to journalism. Objecting to Ariel Helwani is objecting to journalism. That guy does his job as well and has for a long time as any journalist at the company.
Yeah, I'm guessing the issue that Dana has is not with you. It's coming on with you and knowing that you're going to push him a bit and make him uncomfortable, and clearly he does not want that. Doesn't think he deserves that.
I thought he liked that, though. I thought that was part of the carnival barking game. I thought you're in the fight business.
No, but when he's making ESPN money, and I'm certain ESPN is making him money, but he's making them money, and he feels like he should be treated differently. Like, hey, leave me alone. I'm making you a lot of money. I'm your partner.
I would also theorize that your relationship changed because at a time where you were the only person at ESPN with a mainstream platform, ESPN would cover MMA, but you would be a mainstream host legitimizing UFC. And now he is legitimized by the company in its entirety. Exclusive monopoly over their pay-per-view business. ESPN is fully in bed with the UFC, and it is a good partnership so far. But Dana White is a kind of leader of that sport that is going to put ESPN in constant difficult positions. And so far, they've just decided to look the other way. Now he's going directly at one of your employees because one of your employees dared to take offense at something that was so very clearly anti-Semitic. It was disgusting. She didn't lose her job on The Mandalorian, another Disney property, by the way, because she was a conservative. That is not what happened. She lost it because she was an anti-Semite over a meme. And she doubles down on this. This one's easy, Dana. This one's easy. You can't go on the wrong side of this one, too.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Billy, my dad had a good nickname for you earlier. Billy Ill. Get it?
It could also be, I could also be Illy Gill, I guess, right? Illy Gill?
Kidney stones, am I right?
Oh, no. Oh no!
That'll make a good DJ
onion.
Name, though.
Get a raw onion, man. That'll help.
But the IV. Oh man, I love a good IV.
You didn't have kidney stones, did you?
Yeah, I have kidney stones.
You didn't have to pass a kidney stone.
I passed one this morning. That's, I guess, what was causing all the pain and the vomiting.
Jesus, Billy.
Billy, how fucking old are you, man?
This is how old I am. You want to see? Look at what I got.
What's he about to show?
A stone?
This is a butt cushion that I got for Valentine's Day from my wife to sit on because my back hurts when I sit on a chair that's uncomfortable.
Attaboy.
So my Valentine's Day was a butt cushion that I think is similar to one that my grandmother used to use when she still drove because she needed, well, hers was more of a booster seat so she could see, and like this back massager because, you know,
you're old.
Okay,
I'm
let's
falling apart.
Let's chronicle this a little bit. This is the first time any of us have heard from Billy today. We were worried about him. Billy was not present. He was in, it would appear, a bit of pain. He has now popped into the chat. Everyone was very happy to see him, but he mentioned kind of casually, yeah, I passed a kidney stone this morning. I thought that's the worst pain a man could feel, is it not?
Good question, Dan.
Blowing a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, I think.
Yep.
I had my wisdom teeth taken out one time, and they were like impacted, and they had to break them to rip them out of my head. That was pretty painful.
Jesus.
Yeah. But kidney stones aren't fun. I wouldn't say that, you know, I wouldn't recommend it. If you've given the choice, do you want a kidney stone or not? I'd say no on that.
Okay. So what other Valentine's Day gifts did you get? And I was curious. I wanted to bring it up with you guys today. Do you guys wish your friends happy Valentine's Day? I was kind of surprised by the number of like Uber drivers or whatever that were willing to wish me a happy Valentine's Day, which struck me as odd.
Like you were expecting a text from me saying happy Valentine's Day?
No, I'm saying, is it normal in any way for you to send your friends a happy Valentine's Day is what I'm asking you.
No. I don't think anyone's ever done that.
No one has ever wished you? No other man has ever wished you a happy Valentine's Day?
Not that I can recall, no. I mean,
I go the other way on it. I text everybody happy President's Day.
Hmm. Oh, how do you play?
Billy, what other Valentine's Day gifts did you get?
Well, on a given year, Dan, I would walk around with roses and just hand it out to all my friends, happy Valentine's Day, happy Valentine's Day, and just give it to everyone so that everyone feels part of it. Because some people feel lonely on Valentine's Day. But me and my wife obviously had a low-key Valentine's Day this year. I think everyone did. And I didn't get her flowers, right? Because flowers die. So, well, I did get her flowers, actually, but I didn't get her like a bouquet of flowers. I got her flowers to plant, and then I got some like manure also, which is weird because I just gave, you know, poop to my wife so that the flowers can grow in an orchid. And she gave me a cushion for my butt to sit on because I have this really bad back pain and it hurts when I sit on chairs. So I'm sitting now on this like jelly cushion for my butt. And then she got like this back massager thing too. But the cushion is a game changer right now, I'm telling you. You could sit on an egg. It's actually called an egg sitter, I think.
No.
And I did the test. Yeah. It was not the smartest test, but I did the test. I put an egg on the cushion and I sat on the egg and it didn't break.
That is a dangerous game. That sounds like a dangerous game.
The Uber driver is not your friend, by the way. He's just an Uber driver. I mean,
he's also trying to get stars and a good tip, so he'll tell you happy anything if you want.
There's this new setting on Uber where you can tell them exactly what kind of ride you want. It's like a premium option, and you tell them in advance, like, what do you want the temperature to be? Do you want conversation? I love that. Don't talk to me. 5 stars.
That everyone is choosing. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Welcome back. Get you right back to work at Lebatard Show. On your Uber option, are you telling the driver no conversation?
What do you guys think of Uber drivers or just kind of service people in general that ask you for a tip, like that ask you to give them a good 5-star rating as you're getting out? It's like, all right, how about I was going to, but if you ask me to do it, then I'm not going to.
Really?
Oh, man, I hate that. I hate that so much.
Right. Like, okay,
please subscribe, rate, review.
As you're walking out, 5 stars, please. It's like, ooh.
All right. So punitive. You make it punitive. I was going to give you 5 stars. Put that on the poll as well, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. If your Uber driver asks you for a 5-star rating, do you then rescind what would have been your 5-star rating and punish him for it and treat it punitively?
What do you guys do with surveys at the end of a phone call? Like a good phone call? They want you to fill out the customer service survey. But you tell them you're going to do it, right?
No, 0%.
Yeah, you opt in and you hang up always.
Exactly.
Yeah, you
opt in, you hang up. Thank you, Billy.
They don't even get their hopes up, Billy.
All right. Is your move when asked for a survey at the end of a very pleasant service call, opt in, hang up? You cowards.
What do you
Every
mean?
Every time you do it, you don't want to break their heart, Dan, or be rude and tell them no. So, yeah, of course I'll do it. And then, you know, sometimes I'll stick around for one question. If the one question is a good one and it hooks me, I'll stick around for another. But it's a game of how long will I stay on this.
Now, the second, I mean, she'll ask, will you opt in for the second? Of course I will. The second we go to survey, Bill, I hang up.
Okay. Greg Cody, what it not surprising at all. Every little fraud that Stugatz can commit anywhere in the universe, he will seize the opportunity. Carpe diem. Carpe dumb. Yeah. Greg, how is it that you would do this?
Appreciate it.
I always try to be polite while saying no. My MO is to say, geez, you caught me at a bad time. I was just walking out the door. Call me back later with that survey. And then that works two ways. They have no intention of calling you back just to take the survey. And yet I get to escape it while ostensibly being polite by saying, you know what, bad timing. I'm just walking out the door. Please try again. So that's the way I work. And it's good. They don't feel offended that way, you know?
It's very kind.
I like taking surveys. Yeah, my wife loves taking surveys and filling out questionnaires, and I don't like doing any of that stuff. Seems like an intrusion.
I don't feel like anyone likes taking surveys. Does anyone put that on the poll as well, Guillermo, please?
Oh, my wife does.
I think we have a diaper situation here where she just ends up doing all of that stuff, and he says that she enjoys it.
Right. My wife's favorite time is the census, the U.S. census, once every 10 years because she loves filling out that.
Just came out. Yeah, she poured over it.
Oh, you know it.
Did you guys?
No, I'm serious. She loves that.
Did you guys see that the streaker who won the plus 750 bet on a $50,000 bet and then told everybody that he won the bet was canceled. And I wonder if he spent any of the money already, because that one would hurt. If you think you won the bet, you got the publicity from telling everybody you won the bet, and then all of a sudden the bet is canceled and you're not paid.
But you think you won, so you just start spending all your money.
I mean, doesn't that strike you as the behavior of someone who would win a plus 750 bet on the Super Bowl, that they would spend $50,000, tell everybody on the bet that they had won $350,000 on the prop bet,
How do you feel about that? That guy found a loophole, like he did.
No, but that's not allowed. That you can't if
you can't control the destiny of your own bets.
It's not a loophole. He didn't find a loophole. He did something that is explicitly stated that if you do it, your bet will be void. It's not that's not a loophole. That's just not a legal bet.
Next time he has to get a friend to streak the field for him. Right?
Well, he did. He had somebody streak first so that he can ensure he had a friend get arrested first by going out first to make sure to ensure that he could get out there. So he did all the heady play stuff right up until protecting his money, the money that he'd won. And now he gets to be called an idiot. What was a heady play? Stugatz is still out here saying you're arguing
on great move.
You're arguing on behalf of the finding of a loophole.
Well, yeah, I'm arguing on behalf of controlling the destiny of your own bet, which would make it gambling.
Well, it would make it rigged. Is what it would be game. It would be game fixing. Correct. I had no idea that you could make a $50,000 bet on something that could be that easily controlled.
You can't through traditional ways, which is why we were very skeptical of this story. But I'm reading that Andrade, the guy that was the streaker, he told the Tampa radio station that he got several friends to place smaller wagers to total up to that $50,000 total. And then because he couldn't keep his mouth shut, which is also something that we pointed out, like there's no way you get to keep this cash now that you're out there public, couldn't keep his mouth shut. And now the bets have been refunded. So no big payday for Andrade.
Any thoughts there, Cody? I just love that he's just leaning into the Zoom. He's on the phone. He has stopped his pacing. Greg, why'd you stop the pacing? You were better when you weren't seated as a performer. You were more engaged. You were
more... Yeah. You know, my legs were getting a little tired. You know what would be easy? Two things here beg saying. Number one, let's quit calling him a streaker because he had clothes on. So you're not really a streaker. You could look up the definition. You're not really a streaker unless you're substantially naked. But the other thing is the most flexible, manipulable prop bet is the length of the national anthem. Okay, if I'm singing the national anthem, I'm telling all my friends, plunge your guts out on the over because I'm going to carry that last note for about 10 seconds. I'm going to go over by about 3 seconds, and everybody I know is a big winner. So, you know, what prevents that bet from being voided? Am I right?
That's a good point.
Well, you don't tell people that you did that, though. You don't tell them that you're in. Normally, the reason these prop bets are such small bets is because a celebrity of the caliber singing a national anthem at that game is not someone who's going to be trying to make a few friends a few $100s.
Yeah, but maybe their friends and family need a little extra cash, and perhaps they say, hey, I'm going to go over on the anthem.
I'm not
here.
Saying you can't do it. I'm just saying that, generally speaking, that person is too famous to be bothered by a minimum Super Bowl prop bet that might be worth a few $1,000s to somebody in total.
It's done all the time. Done all the time, Levitard.
Okay, now he's all of a sudden an investigative reporter because he wrote the Qatar story in the Miami Herald today.
You have Whitney Houston calling around to all her friends, telling her I'm going to go over on the anthem.
That's right. Bobby, I imagine all of Bobby's friends would have wanted that information.
I actually have some inside info on this. So every Friday, all the professional gamblers get a text of how long the three rehearsals went for the national anthem, and then the line skyrockets. So actually, I got a text from a friend, bet the over on the national anthem because it came in at like 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
Inside information.
And the line was 2 minutes. And so there is a legitimate line movement that happens on Friday for the national anthem bet.
All right, so I want to do something with you guys here that I believe everyone in the room, no matter what your analytics are, no matter who, over 10 years, okay, this is something that we as a show learned how to not get too swept away in much of anything happening during regular season basketball in the NBA, because the first 4 years of the last decade in Miami, every game was so hyper-analyzed that it became an unbearable stupidity to try and analyze these games, who will win based on all of the advanced metrics measurements you're using. I am asking you guys this question from a sports viewpoint. What does the Utah Jazz have to do for you to believe that the Utah Jazz can actually win the championship? What could they go undefeated during a regular season?
No.
And you will believe that they will win the championship? Is it just because over the years, we have watched every incarnation of Utah Jazz basketball, and it never wins at the end? Whether it's Gobert or Donovan Mitchell or Karl Malone or John Stockton or any incarnation of Jerry Sloan's Jazz, we have. Are we holding 5 decades of history against that basketball team?
Yes, I think we are. I'll also say that there is a way, Dan. There's a path. Kevin Durant, his Achilles, Anthony Davis, and his Achilles. That would be the path where maybe I could see the Utah Jazz winning an NBA title. But yes, we are using their past against them. And then I think we're all thinking Donovan Mitchell as your best player is not winning you an NBA title. It might get you to 22-5. It ain't winning you a title.
Okay, well, this is the thing that Shaq said to Donovan Mitchell's face on the broadcast. And I don't think it's fair because it's not getting you to a title because, oh, look what's in the conference. The single greatest player in the history of the sport who we only compare to ghosts like Michael Jordan. And you've seen the dunks he was putting. This is 36 years old.
Crazy.
You guys see that physically, athletically, he's still better than everyone else at 36. Years old, and Blake Griffin hasn't dunked since 2019. And you all saw the dunk from LeBron at 36 this weekend where he's taking the length of the court on 2 dribbles. Whether you thought he traveled or not, he's still bigger, stronger, faster than everyone he's playing against.
Hasn't missed a game playing as good as he's ever played. That wing dunk was my favorite dunk of the weekend. He got one from the way. It was like he was 25 years old.
Okay, but
again,
it's not fair to Donovan Mitchell to compare him. That's not fair. It's not fair to anybody.
Comparing him. I'm saying that's why he's not going to win a title. The Jazz aren't going to win a title.
But you say Donovan Mitchell's not good enough. He would be if LeBron James pulled his groin again.
Right.
And then no?
But the same way Michael prevented a lot of guys from winning titles, LeBron will probably prevent guys Mitchell from winning a title.
But I'm asking you that to say that about Donovan Mitchell because Shaq did this. Shaq did it to Donovan Mitchell's face. And somebody was arguing with me on Twitter saying, you can't say that that's cowardice. And I don't know who said it was cowardice. It seems like there wasn't any bravery in Shaquille O'Neal saying that to Donovan Mitchell's face. And I don't think saying a dumb thing to Donovan Mitchell's face is anything that resembles bravery. Donovan Mitchell is somebody who is as good at what he does as anybody is at that thing that he does. And his team is good because he has grown over the last few years.
Yep.
And I also don't believe that he's as good as LeBron James. But that's the slight now? That's the slight that a guy isn't as good as LeBron James, so therefore he's not good enough to win a championship with.
I don't feel like I'm slighting him. I'm saying he's a great player. I'm just not saying he's the greatest player to ever play, and the greatest player or one of the greatest players to ever play, LeBron James, is still playing and still playing at a very high level. And if it's not LeBron, it's Kawhi Leonard. Dan, I'm not certain in a best of seven you would feel comfortable picking the Jazz over the Mavericks right now. Think about it. Porzingis and Luka. I'm not certain.
Or the Nuggets, for that matter.
They're not even a playoff team. The Mavericks right now.
So you're just doing star power. You're just believing this team has a better star than Donovan Mitchell. You're doing to Donovan Mitchell what I did to Jimmy Butler all of last year.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah.
But isn't Donovan Mitchell better than Jimmy Butler?
He might be. He's in a more difficult conference, though. I mean, Jimmy Butler doesn't have to face LeBron James, doesn't have to face Kawhi Leonard, doesn't have to face Damian Lillard, doesn't have to face Chris Paul.
Isn't Donovan Mitchell indisputably a top 10 player in that league by whatever the metrics are that you're choosing to use? Bottom half of the top 10, admittedly, against some of those guys like Giannis. Or am I getting it wrong? Is he not a top 10 player in the league? Is he a top 10 player in the league the way...
I pull up my top 10 rankings here, Dan.
No, but the reason I'm doing that is because I believe if you... throughout any point in the history of the sport, if I believe I have a top 10 player on my team and I have the right complementary player, I do believe I have a team that's worthy of winning a championship.
Is he a top 10 player, though? I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now.
He's a top 10 player in the league right now.
Yeah, but there are other guys you would trust over him, Mike. You know that. You would trust Damian Lillard over him.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
What's Utah's record? The answer is no to my original.
Five losses.
23-5.
Jesus.
The answer to my original question is there is nothing they could do that would make any of you believe that they could win the championship. Okay, very good. Topic closed. We now welcome in Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. I'm glad we had that conversation. Top 10 players, ranking the teams, regular season basketball. Okay, we have all agreed. I want to hit a gavel. I want to close the session. Okay, we've all agreed Utah cannot win the championship.
I think they beat the Sixers without Donovan Mitchell last night.
Ben Simmons had a career high, and they won anyway, 23-5. There's nothing they can do, Dan. It doesn't matter. They can be totally undefeated and win all their games in both the playoffs and the regular season. And at the end of it, I still will not believe they have won.
Jordan Clarkson had 40 points last night. He's on the Jazz?
They beat Ben Simmons at his best.
You know what's weird? Derek Favors is back on the Jazz.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he had. Look at his career. He had 1 year in New Orleans. Decided, man, Utah's great. I'm going back.
Joe Ingles, that's why. That's the reason no one trusts Utah.
Is it because of how he looks? Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Labatard Show. Is the reason no one trusts the Utah Jazz because of how Joe Ingles looks?
No, it's because of how Quinn Snyder looks.
Okay, put that on the poll as well. Or is it because of how cocainey Quinn Snyder looks? It might be the combination of both. You can't trust both those guys to win you an NBA championship. You can, however, trust them in a backroom card game somewhere in the Upper East Side to get you your money if you've been bilked by a cheater.
Never trust them more.
Ron McGill in with us now, and we've got questions. We've always got animal questions for Ron McGill. His endowment, which continues to grow. We salute him every week. We celebrate the large and growing endowment of one Ron McGill. It now has an updated website. Before we get in here with some questions for Ron, tell the people where they can find you if they want to help out with some of the things you do, Ron. We've told them again and again that your money and your help goes directly to the animals. So just tell them what they have to do if they want to support some of the causes that that you're interested in terms of keeping animals safe and free and healthy.
Well, now thanks to you guys, there is a specific website, ronmcgill.org. Look at that, ronmcgill.org. It takes you right to the site, and you can go to the endowment, the conservation tab there, and it'll take you right to the donate page, and you can help out there. And it kind of explains the endowment pretty well there on the page also. So hopefully I don't have to take up too much of the precious time on this incredible program to speak about that. You can just go to ronmcgill.org and learn more about it.
Sex and the Animals was a big giant hit. Everyone loved that on Mystery Crate. A lot of applause, very embarrassing. We have some questions about that. But first, Roy, what do you have? I'm sorry you're embarrassed. Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Ron, most of the country is going through a very dangerous cold situation right now. How are the stray animals on the street dealing with this cold? And is there anything that us humans can help?
Well, fortunately, most of the animals don't seem to have be able to contract the virus. And those that do, we have yet to see any animal that has died from it. So animals that contract the virus, we've seen that.
Ron, he said cold, not COVID. He said
cold. Yeah, cold weather, Ron.
I thought he said COVID. Yeah. Listen, you know, a lot of animals suffer during this. Now, some animals have a natural instinct to survive. They'll either go into a hibernation state, a torpid state. They'll bury themselves deep into a tunnel to protect themselves from the cold that way. Places like, you know, Dallas and areas like that that are not used to this type of cold, I suspect you're going to be having a lot of, you know, loss of life in the animal kingdom. But it's nature's way of kind of culling, thinning a population, making sure only the strongest are surviving, and they're passing that gene on to the next generation. But there's no doubt that a lot of animals are going to lose their lives, especially in those areas that are not accustomed to this type of cold.
We will get to some more questions in a second, but I have just been sent a Miami Herald story that I need to read from urgently here to break into the news. We will get back to Ron McGill in a second, but this is from the Miami Herald, and the headline is, Miami lawyer whose pants caught fire during arson trial arrested on cocaine charge. And I just want to read a couple of sentences here just because when this headline lands on your desk, you need to do something about it. The Miami lawyer who drew worldwide notoriety after his pants caught fire during an arson trial has been arrested on a cocaine charge. Stephen Gutierrez, 32, whose law license is currently revoked, was pulled over Monday night near Westchester and arrested on a felony cocaine charge. According to Miami-Dade police report, he was pulled over for driving without a working headlight. An officer saw a bulge in his pocket and believed it was a knife. It turned out to be a metal cylinder with a white powder inside. Gutierrez spontaneously blurted out, "That's cocaine," according to the arrest report. Do you guys want to hear any more on this? I don't know why I stopped in the middle of this. I just thought a cocaine lawyer getting his pants on fire during an arson trial was something we'd be interested in. Greg Cody, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Love that story. So Miami. Hey, Ron, the weird tradition around the country, including at Zoo Miami, is having animals predict the Super Bowl winner every year. What do you recall? You've been around forever. What do you recall about the origin of that weird tradition?
You know, it's just the zoo's kind of desperate attempt to just get whatever free publicity they can get. What I do recall, though, is that the greatest prediction ever made was by Peggy R. Elephant, who did in fact predict that the Giants would beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl that year. And she was the only animal of all the zoo predictions that did so. She was laughed at. She was scorned on. And in the end, she was made into a deity.
And how did that happen? How did you trick the animal into picking that?
I didn't trick the animal into anything. She picked it, Dan, because she knew. She's an elephant. They're incredibly intelligent animals. Oh. She knew. It was without hesitation. They had one Patriots helmet. They had one Giants helmet. And without hesitation, she picked up that helmet and she shook it. She said, "Winner, Super Bowl." She was laughed at. She was mocked.
Peggy's
she
a
was
fraud.
Ridiculed. Yeah, Peggy. Now she's a goddess.
Well, what happened? Is Peggy still with us?
Peggy's still with us.
All right. I thought Peggy was gone. Okay, so Peggy's still with
God,
us.
Oh, God, Dan, please.
I'm sorry. So how has she made other predictions, or was that the only one?
No, she said, "I'm done" after that. She went out on top.
Okay. Billy, what do you have for Ron McGill of Zoo Miami?
Ron, if I was 6'4" and weighed 280 pounds and had 1,000 cats around me who were intent on killing me, how long would I last?
Not long. You go down pretty – first of all, you're 6'4", 280 pounds. You're a little on the heavy side in the sense that I don't think even a truly muscular person – are you saying 280 pounds of muscle? Or
oh, I'm jacked, Ron. I'm a 6'4", 280 that's – oh, I'm big. I can punch a cat.
All the more reason you're going to go down faster, because if you're that bulked up, you don't have a lot of limberness to you. You're all jacked up, and these cats are going to go right for your carotid, and you'll bleed out. I'd say I'll give you probably 15 minutes.
How many cats, though? He made it 1,000 cats. How many cats? What's the minimum number of cats that could take out a 6'4", 280-pound Billy Gill who thinks he can punch cats?
I think if you had 30 really focused cats, they would do it in a heartbeat. 30. I think even less than that. I think maybe even 20. If you had 20 adult, focused, ravenous cats, they would do it. It's just, there's no way, Dan. They're so fast. They're so, you know, limber that you just bleed out. That's it. You would just bleed out. There's nothing you could do to stop it.
If you were trying to create like a fight night and you wanted it to be a competitive fight, how many cats are you putting in there that it could go either way?
15.
What?
Ron, yeah.
Really?
15.
I'm taking the 15
cats. Guys, look. Let's, you know, you guys are so full of yourselves. Listen, y'all think you're going to hold. The minute the first cat bites you, the kind of pain you're going to experience is like, and then the second cat. And when you get to the 15th, you're going to wish you were dead. Okay? It happens so quickly, guys. There's not, no, trust me. There's nothing you could do. They would.
You haven't seen how quick I punch, though. I'm punting a cat.
They'd be severing your tendons. Not only do they have teeth, they have claws. They'd be scratching your eyes out. You'd be hanging by like the retina, the nerve. It'd be so disgusting, so horrible, so painful that you would wish it. Oh, I can't even go into it.
Can cats organize like that?
Generally speaking, cats are not social animals, but if you look at lions, absolutely. They organize their kills, and it's because they work in a pride in an organized manner that they're able to take down animals 10 times their size. So listen, guys. Don't think you're no way, Billy. You're done. You're toast. It'll be painful. It'll be slow. It'll be miserable.
But as soon as one of these cats sees how far I throw that first cat, they're all running away, Ron.
Wait a minute, Cody. You're assuming one cat's gonna go at you one at a time. I'm saying the 15 cats are gonna go 3, 2, 1. Now
they're not doing a countdown. Done. They're cats, Ron. They're not counting down.
No, wait a minute, talking now, Ron. I mean,
you're presenting to me a scenario, okay? The scenario is that these 15 cats are organized.
1,000.
A thousand cats.
No, here, okay, let's look. This is getting
too... What if I weigh 240?
This is getting, instead of 280? This is getting too messy. Ron, respect the question. Here's the deal. You can't have the cats counting. You can't have them choreographing anything. You can't have them organizing like an army. And I also think you're making them bigger cats than the cats they're imagining. Yeah. They're 15-pound cats. They're not like small adult cats from the wild. They're just 15 cats. And Chris is right. He's punting two or three of them down the street.
And that's 15 cats, which equates to, that equates to 60 canine teeth. That equates to 150 claws. And it equates to musculature that's twice as quick, twice as strong as the musculature of a human being. Once one eye is scratched out, once one carotid is bitten into and bleeding out, what are you going to do, Dan? What are you going to do?
What are you doing making cats?
Try to stop the bleeding. No, bleeding by putting your hand over it. The cat bites your hand and severs the tendon. You lose use of that hand.
Ron,
you
have cats counting, not only counting, but counting backward together to attack me. You have them being
organizing.
They don't know how to fight together.
Dan, they do know how to fight together. How do you think lions survive?
They're not cats, lions. Though.
Yeah, but cats.
Garfield.
But they're descendants of lions. They have an instinct that enables them.
Yeah, the crappiest little house cats. Okay, it's like the crappiest descendant of lions.
Fucking like kittens here, like cats.
Okay. You know, guys. You know, you gotta do oranges with oranges here. Now you're saying, oh, we're gonna have a strong, jack, 280-pound guy on muscle, but all of our cats are gonna be like dead. Okay, come on, guys. Yes, Billy.
We came at this the wrong way, Ron. I feel like you're getting defensive because we're like attacking you like a bunch of cats here. So what would you recommend? What's the best way to fight a cat? How would you have us fight cats to survive?
You run away. You gotta cover your neck, and run away, because listen, if they're after you, their instinct is to go for your neck. Their instinct is to either break it or sever the artery in your neck. Guys, I'm just telling you, have you ever seen, go YouTube the videos of this guy, he's hilarious. This one guy, he's doing a live shot with a domestic cat that he's trying to adopt out. And the thing all of a sudden starts to bite him and tail him. He's screaming like a little girl. This guy's probably a good 200 something pounds. And this cat is starting to just take him out. It's hilarious. It's one cat. And it's supposed to be a tame pet cat. Imagine 15 of those turning on you at the same time.
So a little tiny baby cat is
just... Now it's a little tiny baby cat.
No, I'm just saying, a little kitten, that's born into my house, that's never been in the wild, it just knows to go for my arteries? I don't believe that.
Okay, so when that little cat grows up, little kid grows up, you put it out in the field and watch what happens when it sees a bird or sees a mouse or sees any other natural prey. I've seen them take out squirrels almost half their size. These little things that... were born as little cute kittens in your house and didn't learn anything, grew up to be freaking squirrel killers, okay?
Oh, my
so
God.
So watch what happens. It's called instinct, my friend, instinct.
All right. Apple,
that's evil.
Apple or orange?
What do you mean apple? I like apples.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. You choose apples over orange. How about pulp or no pulp?
You know, if I'm really thirsty, no pulp, because I want to go down fast. But if I really want to enjoy it, I like the pulp.
Chris, did you have something else for Ron McGill?
What is the most, I know we learned on the Sex and the Animals, on the Mystery Crate, that all animals like sex, but who are the romantics in the group? What's the most romantic animal?
Well, you know, I got to look at the things like the bowerbirds. I think we talked about the bowerbird. This is an animal that gets so many presents and gifts for his mate. He creates this bower and brings all kinds of beautifully colored things and beautifully ornate things to say, look, honey, this is how much I love you. It's his form of jewelry to convince her that he's worthy of her coming to the house. So I think that's pretty romantic. And the dances of birds. God, look at the mannequin. Chad, just Google the mannequin. Watch the mannequin dance. And man, I fall in love with the freaking mannequin when he dances like that.
Dwight Freeney or Zach Thomas?
What? Oh, I forgot. Oh, I don't know. Zach Thomas.
Another homer.
Everyone's so flippant about my friend Freeney. I mean,
Ron, where do you stand on the big cat establishment not allowing the cheetah into its club just based off the arbitrary notion that the cheetah cannot roar, therefore it is not a big cat? It's high time we allow the cheetah into the big cat club. Do you agree?
You know, it's funny because some people do consider it a big cat. Fish and Wildlife considers it a big cat. When they do a permitting, they don't allow, you have to treat the cheetah as you would treat any other big cat. The fact that a cat doesn't roar does not make it a big cat. The snow leopard cannot roar. Somebody going to tell me the snow leopard's not a big cat? It's one of the most spectacular big cats on the face of the planet. Okay, so these zoologists, a lot of times these people try to box their little cats in different boxes. No, they're all big cats. Anything that gets bigger than a damn house cat is a big cat.
This mannequin bird is literally doing a moonwalk to impress the ladies.
Tell me about it, right? You're checking it out, right, Coach? See, you get respect for these animals. Think about it. It's incredible. You guys, when you look at a wild like this way, it'll blow your mind what these animals do. They have so much romance. They have so much passion. We need to learn from them, man.
Chris, what were the highlights of Mystery Crate? Did it spawn any other secondary questions that can be followed up off? That need to be followed up on. Why are you getting all sad, McGill? Just because
I just have a fear of where this is going.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I don't think any of us had any doubt that Ron was a man that could hold his own in the bedroom. Like before, I didn't need Sex and the Animals to know. Just look at the man. I mean, he's like 6'9".
Yes.
But if you listen to that, you come away You come away taking from it. You were right. Ron can handle his own in the bedroom.
Okay, very good. A good reason to listen. Greg Cody, can you handle yourself in the bedroom?
Oh, jeez. I'm sorry, Greg.
I can, for sure. Why do you think my bed broke a couple of weeks ago? But seriously,
baby! You know,
Ron, I do have a quick question, harking back to what we were talking about. If I'm in a room with 15 threatening cats, isn't it true that I could disorient them and cause them to disperse if I suddenly started barking like a Rottweiler?
You know, there are a lot of caveats that you guys are putting into this confrontation. Generally speaking, no. Again, I thought the question was, if there are 15 cats focused on killing you and you're by yourself, who's going to win this battle? It's the 15 cats focused on killing you. If you're just going to take 15 cats out of the Humane Society and put them in a room with you, they're not even going to bother you. And yes, if you bark like a Rottweiler, they're probably going to walk away or run away before they hiss at you and run away even faster. But the question was not that. The question was 15 cats at their apex, ticked off and focused on killing you. Would you be able to survive if you were 240 pounds and 6'4"? No.
Greg, what would that sound like, just out of curiosity?
That right there is how he broke his bed right there, Chris. That right there is how that bed broke in that bedroom.
Baby. Bow wow.
I'm sure the son is loving hearing this.
See you later, Ron. Good talking to you.
Lights of heaven, guys. Be safe.
See you, Ron.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.